quality mullets bring you?
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you can hear, this is not the dulcet tones of, was it guacamole Jesus?
Avocado
Jesus, sorry.
That was good. That was some good memeage.
Thanks, mate. I like dropping it in an audio form. As you can tell, this is Frosty talking. I am joined by Cam.
Good evening.
And Dave.
Hello, hello.
We have no Patrick here. I'm going to start the rumour that it's probation curfew. Or he's getting an oven tutorial and how to actually use his oven.
Or he was going out to buy a new toaster because he broke the last one.
After the result last night, he's quit fever.
To be honest, mate, that wasn't far off from me as well. So before we get into that, how about we talk signings? It's been a couple of weeks since we actually dropped that in. So who have we had? We've had...
Kopczynski, I think, was first off.
Yeah, Michael Kopczynski, Polish national. Do we know anything more than that?
Ex-Champions League, played for Legia Warsaw in the Champions League against Real Madrid, I think, last season.
26 years old.
Yep, DM. So, he didn't get a lot of minutes for Legia last season. Obviously, I think they were looking at moving him on, so he's obviously needing another challenge. And it's interesting that he, at that age, he didn't have a lot of interest, I'm guessing, from the rest of Europe. I'm assuming someone at 26 coming out of Legia Warsaw might have been able to go somewhere
else. I heard the story of why.
Why is that?
His missus plays rugby for Poland, and the chance to come to New Zealand was apparently golden in her mind.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so thank you, rugby.
It might not be a lack of interest. It might just be a lifestyle thing, you know. There's a lot to like about living this side of the world, and it might just be that simple that they, you know, thought, well, we can still earn decent money over here, and why not?
Yeah.
His pedigree certainly looks good on paper, though, and, you know, everything about it says probably good piece of business.
Yep. Yeah.
You don't get game time in Champions League against Real Madrid twice without having something to your game.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, I think it's a solid signing in an area that we need improvement. So yeah, it's until he's been here for a few weeks and got more minutes under his legs, we're prepared to give him a bit of a pass at this stage.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And also knowing that he's odds on going to be in front of Stephen Taylor and Andrew Durante, two older guys who,
or Fox as well.
Yeah, Fox not so much, but certainly those two guys being older, very defensively minded, but also not the quickest on the park. We do need obviously a bit of cover up that spine. Mm. And I think Rudan has talked about packing the spine with quality.
So. Which is a really good way to play football in the A-League, to be fair.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And we had a couple more signings as well, speaking of up the spine and lines up the spine, certainly. We had one Mr. Butters, also known as Mitch Nichols, and David Williams has come back to the A-League as well.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything of Williams since he signed at all. I think
he's injured,
isn't he? Yeah, perhaps he had a knock when he came back. Genuinely don't know the details around that. But obviously, Butters would have been looking for a club after being released by Perth in March. So there's, it's interesting. Obviously, he's got some history. His history is well documented, so we probably shouldn't get too much into that. He's, I would be guessing, on his last opportunity or... there won't be too many places that will take the opportunity or that risk at this stage. So there's no doubt that he can be a quality footballer. He's played five or six caps for Australia, and he's got A-League's winners medals, I think, at Brisbane and at Victory.
He's got
so
two.
He is a quality footballer, and he can bring some good things to our club, I hope.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think despite his problems, he's a proven A-League player. He adds things we need. He's got a lot of assists. He's got a lot of goals, and it's exactly the sort of player we need if it weren't for that risk. But I think the reality is someone was going to take the chance. It might as well be us, and hopefully it pays off, because if someone else had picked him up and he'd banged in 10 goals against us, we would have been pretty gutted to have not taken it.
Ernie Merrick said, I think, a couple of years ago that with signings and big-name signings like this, there is always something there that causes risk. Why is someone like just throwing a name out, Rolly Bonaventure, leaving Europe to come to Australia? Well, why isn't he getting that first-team football? So there's always risk around, and I don't know what that was with role at all. I think he's a good quality guy and plays some great football. But there's always that risk around those kind of signings, no matter where it is in this type of league.
Well, at least with Mitch Nichols, it's a known risk. It's not the unknown risk.
Correct. I think with Paratski, we saw pretty much exactly that. I mean, this guy is a great player. What's the issue here? And I think we saw that through his tenure was it was just consistency. When he was on form, he was fantastic, but he just didn't always keep that level up. And I think at least in this case, you know what the issue with Mitch Nichols is. You know why he's out fishing for new contracts and not being picked up immediately. And hopefully it's a thing we can manage through and, you know, get the best out of him.
And we've got Dale Williams. He's come back from Europe, from Turkey, was it?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was somewhere obscure, but he's come back to the A-League. I remember him as being quite rapid, direct.
Yeah.
Shithouse haircut.
Oh, yeah. I seem to remember him playing in the same sort of channel as Roy does. So there might be a bit of competition for that, unless Redan believes he can use him in a different way. I mean, he did score a hat-trick against us here in the 5-0 loss to the Heart. That was the Huawei 10 grand giveaway game, which probably wasn't the best game to lose 5-0 in, to be fair. So he's obviously got some talent. You wouldn't be picked up in Europe if you didn't. So, yeah, it's quite a, on paper, a very, very good signing.
Yeah, again, he's a bit of a journeyman, played for a lot of clubs, but he's proven he can score goals in the A-League, and hopefully, once again, he can do that for us. I think you've got to wonder whether he can rekindle that form. I think that's the risk here. We know he used to be that good. We haven't seen him for a while, though. We don't know whether he's still going to be banging them in. He's not an out-and-out nine. You know, he's not that role. But if he plays as we know he can, I think we'll see him banging in quite a few, and that's great. It means up front we've filled a couple of those spots with guys we know are proven A-League goal scorers. That's got to be really good. We're still just lacking that out and out nine though.
My only concern with these two guys is that they are in positions that we were already well covered for in the starting 11, whereas we still have deficiencies elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, Mitch Nichols, he plays more of an attacking mid. You know, which is kind of competition with Singh, who's we pretty much agree that he's the business.
I think the one thing I'll say on that is I think Mitch has shown the ability to play wider. Singh, when he's been tried wider, hasn't looked that good. He looks much better out attacking mid, whereas you can push Mitch wider and have him playing a role like Acosta does, for example, rather than just central. But he looks good central as well. So I think it probably just creates a bit of competition there, which is good.
Yeah, but that also kind of cramps in Williams as well. Yeah,
correct. Williams, I think, is more of a problem because I think
he's a wide striker, isn't he?
He's very much that kind of Roy mold, or arguably that same wide role we're talking about pushing Mitch into. I don't know that he mostly just adds competition and a bit of depth there, I think, rather than necessarily being a starter every week. But that's not necessarily the worst thing. If you've got four or five guys pushing for three or four spots, that's probably a good place to be.
I actually think it's good to have Williams purely playing down that channel. When you look how Roy went last season, Roy only got four goals last season. He was really struggling to score. So that competition, at the moment, Roy would be a given starter in every single game because of the qualities he had. But if he's not scoring goals, we now have another proven player who can come in and do the job. So it might push Roy on to better things.
Yeah, and we're talking about sort of roles where you don't necessarily need 90 minutes out of all of those guys. I think 60 minutes and a 30-minute player actually is pretty common in those roles to keep things fresh up there. And so I think you might see some rotation through who's there. You know, if Roy's not having a great day, bringing Williams on for the last 30 minutes is a good option just to mix it up. And so I think you'll see all of those guys getting minutes, but I don't think you'll necessarily see them all starting every game because you just can't fit them in. But we need depth there, and we need better depth than we've had in the past where you're bringing on a 16-year-old kid as the 30-minute player.
And without a nine, having the interchangeability of Burns, Williams, and Krishna is probably a good thing because without that nine as a focal point, those guys are going to have to do a lot of work to create space for each other. So if you play those three across the top, which seems likely at this point without looking further into more signings, then I think it's a good thing.
Speaking of depth, there's been one more signing, and you'd have to say this is deep depth, Mr. Alex Roofer. He's been around and he has, he came back for a trial, which is, you know, good on him. He's willing to back himself and Redan gave him the opportunity and he's picked up a 1-year contract, which is, to be congratulated for. He's obviously shown the coach enough there, even though his last act last year was to get himself a red card and get sent off in a grand total, I think about 12 minutes.
He's a good kid. I quite like him. I'm genuinely surprised he didn't end up in Europe like Logan has done and like McGarry has done, for example. He obviously has those connections there, having been born over in Switzerland. And his dad been playing over there and his uncle obviously being who he is. So I don't think he'd had an issue getting a contract in one of the lower leagues in Europe at all. So I'm genuinely surprised he stayed and obviously backing himself, and you've got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think he's the sort of player I'm not surprised we hadn't immediately signed before his contract ran out or anything like that. I think it's a spot and a level of depth that we can afford to wait on. We don't need to have that locked in straight away. And he's decided he wants to stay and stick it out here in the A-League and try and stay in that shop window, and good on him. Because I think if he had left, as you say, he probably could have picked up a contract elsewhere, but he's made the decision that rather lower league Europe, he'd rather be in the A-League. And I think it's probably a bold call, but not necessarily a silly one, because it doesn't, you know, the squads in the A-League are so small, it doesn't take many injuries before you've gone from, you know, a backup player to starting every week. And if that were to happen and he takes that chance, he's, you know, he's in a much better position, you'd say, than playing second or third tier in some of those European leagues.
And also, playing over here compared to playing third division in Germany, he's in the eye of the national selectors. Correct. So even if he's playing Hand Premiership or and he's going to get a few minutes, it still keeps
one
him
thing, though, I think there or there probably should. Squad. Give him extra credit for is the fact that this is not the first time he's been dropped to the outer. Yep. Under Ernie, he was basically told that, you know, he was no longer, his services were no longer required, even though he had a contract.
Yep.
And you know, you would expect him to basically, most players would go, all right, you can pay me out and I'll go somewhere else. But he didn't. He stayed. He fought for his position. So he's shown this more than one time. So that that durability is to be applauded.
Yeah, well, there's one other player you can say that about as well, because the suggestion's always been that Lowry was in that similar position where they were looking to offload him during that January window.
Mm, true.
And for whatever reason that didn't happen, I would suggest it was because he didn't want to agree to the termination.
And he wasn't injured at the time as well.
Yeah, and he's stuck around and he seems to have earned himself a starting spot now from the looks of it. You know, what we've seen is under Rudan, he's well back in the mix from being very much on the outer for a long time now.
The other thing about
my segue, Dave.
The other thing about Rufer I just wanted to come to is that we signed him at the same time as Redington, and the development between those two players has been quite stark in their contrast. So I think this may be Alex's last chance here. Again, different coach. He's been here under Ernie, under Des and Greeny, under Darye, and now under Rudes. I'm hoping this is now that catalyst to develop him into that starter, into that, because that combination, if it worked well, for Rufer and Singh working in the field, would be a magnificent thing to have. So I really hope this is that catalyst for him to push on to that next level.
Yeah, agreed. And I guess the reality is he's still young. So if that doesn't happen, I think with his connections and with, you know, the skill he does have, he's still a shout to go over to Europe and play that second or third tier and maybe push on. He's, you know, he's still got years in him, but I think you're probably right. This is last chance saloon in this league.
Right. I guess we come on to actually competitive minutes then for these guys. There was an FFA Cup game, the Knicks versus Bentley Greens in Melbourne or outside Melbourne. Did you guys have much in the way of expectation before this? what were your thoughts about positives and negatives?
I legitimately thought this was going to be a win for us. I thought, you know, we finally drawn a non-A-League side, which, you know, gives us a good chance of walking away with a win here. I think we all know the FFA Cup isn't exactly a tournament that the Phoenix care about. I mean, there's good reasons not to be that invested in it. And it's probably true of most of the A-League sides that until you hit about the semis, it's really just an extra game you're playing. So whilst expecting a win, it wasn't necessarily that I was, you know, excited for a win. I was mostly looking at this as a hit out. And the hit out we saw isn't the hit out I wanted to see. It didn't settle my nerves about the upcoming season. If anything, it confirmed some of my fears, particularly that lack of a number nine is still concerning. I think that's an area we need to do something about. We've got a lot of players sitting around that position that are good and can score goals, but we just lack that person in the middle there who can either hold it up or bang it in themselves.
Should we go through the starting lineup first of all, just to kind of so there was Philip Curto at the back in goal, Kakache at left fullback, then Taylor and Durante centres. Ryan Lowry on the right. So interesting, the fullbacks, very defensive. Mm-hmm. One former centre back and one.
To be fair, we don't have a right back. So
Louis Fenton was on the bench and he has played at that level. Yep. In what were they playing? 4-3-3.
Fox also has played at right back as well, hasn't he?
Fox has played right back.
Like, yes, a couple of times, I think.
Yeah, so I think the question that Rudan has asked himself here is, and we all agree, Fox is the best athlete who can play in there to fill in a role where Kupczynski obviously isn't up to match fitness at this point. Fox is a hell of an athlete, a defensively minded player. Can he do a job? And I think that's probably where he was thinking of it. And defensively, he did a job. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, so
it was Roofer as well, you could have put in there, though.
But he's not a defensive midfielder. He's much more of an attacking midfielder. So he's a, more box to box. More box to box than
more box to box. But yeah, he certainly, if you asked him to sit deeper and give support, I think he would have been able to do that. You're basically making a decision between bringing someone back from a bit further forward or pushing someone forward from further back.
Yeah. And I think it depends what you want out of that game. And if sorry, Frosty, we're moving away from what you were trying to do, but if you've worked on that defensive, if you've worked on that defensive structure, which Rudan came out and said afterwards is what they have been working on, then I can understand why he would be considering such a defensive formation.
So what we've alluded to is the midfield three was Kupczynski, Fox and Butters. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kupczynski and Fox playing as a defensive two and Butters in front. And then the front three was Burns, Singh and Krishna. Singh playing as the false nine in a way.
Krishna and Burns both played wide. They're interchangeable, to be fair. And Singh turned up in a lot of places, interchangeable with Butters as well. So it was more like a 4-2-2-2, but the two up top being played wide.
Wide twos. So obviously Dave's talked about the lack of a number nine. I've been quite vocal about needing a nine to basically suck in those centre backs and give our wide players and Singh in front of their centre backs a little more space. And I think that was perfect example last night. Bentley Greens, they are very well drilled.
They currently sit third in the in the Victoria Premier League.
That surprises me. They're only third,
with only two games left of the season. So, and they've performed well in the cup before. So it shouldn't be a surprise that they performed as they did. Mm. The first, I'm like Dave, I expect this to be a win. I genuinely thought we were going to win this. When we put out the team we put out, I thought, well, we should still win because of the sheer potential in that attack. But what we put out and how Bentley Greens played meant that we never even looked likely to score a goal.
So let's run through what it turns out that it has happened before, in that Mark Rudan said after the game that what they'd done is gone for 10 days at the Gold Coast and done heavy fitness and defence.
Double sessions both days, all days.
So he wasn't, in the aftermatch, he alluded to the fact that, you know, the heavy legs weren't too surprising and that they'd really only worked on the defensive side. And I think that showed to me they looked fairly well structured. They played a very deep back four.
Kurto did one thing, mate, and that was lift the ball out of the back of his net. And he can't be blamed for the goal. But he was dead bored the rest of the game because defensively we looked sound.
To be fair, it was both ends.
I want to disagree slightly because I think for most of the game that's true, but I think defensively you've got to be disappointed with conceding the goal the way you did. I think that's defensively that is just poor for the goal. I think for the rest of the game, structure was good. You know, there's a lot of good things going on defensively, but you slip for one moment as badly as that was and you're down a goal. You know, if this had gone nil all and, you know, we'd ended up losing an extra time or penalties, you would have gone, okay, that's fair enough. We went out to do a defensive job, but we let that defense slip for a moment and that's the goal they scored, and it was far too easy.
Well, let's describe it just because we're in audio medium. We conceded a corner out on our right-hand side and it was whipped into the near post, and unfortunately, basically, their striker wasn't marked. Very capable guy.
Marko Yankovic.
Son of former Real Madrid player, blah, blah, blah. Looked fairly capable, but he got a free head.
Yeah,
absolutely. Didn't have to jump at all.
Yeah, and Fox misread his jump. That's where the issue lies. The striker didn't have to jump at all. Basically, first viewing, it looked like it hit him and went in. Like he has played for the header, but you know, it was a very easy header.
He was surprised that it came to him, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
He was pleasantly
surprised.
So
we have that many centre-backs on the field. That surely the striker should be marked. That's not the goal we should concede.
Yeah, no, he was close. Probably their tallest player, so you would expect him to be quite heavily marked.
I'm trying to temper what I say a bit because obviously I was incredibly disappointed. I don't want to just go on a rant about the game, but there were a lot of signs like that from Fox, from individual players across the park during the game, which were worrisome at this, even at the stage of preseason.
Heavy mind as well as heavy legs.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one because I think the the reality is the teams we're playing here are coming towards the end of their season. They're peaking, whereas we're only just starting. We haven't really had an actual run out yet. I mean, we've obviously had a couple of you know, 60-minute run rounds here, but I don't think you can call that any sort of real hit out. This is the first time we've you know, taken to the grass in anger. And
do we want to call that grass? That was quite possibly horrendous. It looked like a one-day cricket pitch without bounce.
Yeah. But, so, you know, it's fair to say this isn't a tournament we take particularly seriously. We're not judging our coaches or our players based on performances in this tournament. It's not a priority for us. So I can understand why he's gone, we're actually going to, you know, we're going to work hard on fitness and we're going to work on some other stuff for a 10-day camp, and then we're just going to have a game at the end of it, and that's how we're going to treat this. That makes sense. But at the same time,
it was just
the quality
so poor
of the players we're putting out there should be good enough, even tired, even without, you know, any football in their legs, should be putting out a better performance than this. But we just never, as you said, never looked like we were going to score here.
Yeah.
And we conceded a very soft goal. We defended well the rest of the game, but you concede a soft goal and never look like scoring. It's hard to be super positive about that. It's hard to go, that's a really good sign for what's coming, because the one thing we tried to work on, we conceded a soft goal, you know?
Yeah.
So we've touched on the defense looking fairly solid apart from the one glaring mistake. How did we feel about basically when we did actually get possession, which wasn't all that much? Bentley really controlled the ball quite well.
Very well the first half an hour, yes.
And then we should probably add in that in the 33rd minute, they had a player get a second yellow. I thought his first one was
definitely
a yellow
orange
and a half.
Yeah, definitely an orange card, that one. I would have been surprised if he walked for that.
He was quite unlucky about the second one, I think.
But you can understand why he got a yellow for it.
His
studs raked down his shin. It's going to be a foul. It's going to be a card.
I think it was a foul. But he'd already had it more than a card.
I think when you've already put in a challenge like the one you had, and you know you've been warned for that, I think you accept that this is probably a yellow card challenge. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're always flirting with a yellow in a challenge like that, and you're already on thin ice with the ref.
You can't dive in when you've done that previously.
Particularly that early in the game, a ref's, you know, looking to stamp some control on the game, and if you're biffing out multiple challenges of that kind of dangerous nature, I think, of course, you're looking at cards.
So looking at us with the ball, there are a lot of concerns. Now, again, tempered by the fact that Rudes has come out afterwards and said that we haven't worked on the attacking part of the game. So be it. Okay, I take that on board. However, some of the things that happened were things professional footballers shouldn't be doing. So we struggled incredibly under a good high press. So when they lost the ball in the first half an hour, they would press us hard every single time. We turned the ball over. Kakache was particularly bad at this. We wouldn't have an outlet from those two defensive midfielders, so Taylor and Durante would be playing the ball between each other, but there wouldn't be anywhere else for them to go further forward. De Lowry is not a right back, so I forgive him for the fact that going forward he wasn't particularly potent until they had the man sent off and there was a bit more space. When we did get the ball forward, Burns never took the right option. He was trying and went to the tricks too early. Instead of looking up and playing the ball, playing what's in front of him, there was always a better option. Instead, he's trying to do flicks and tricks and beat players when they just wasn't on.
I was about to say exactly that. He tried every trick he knew and none of it came off.
Yep, it certainly did look like that Butters hadn't played with Burns, Krishna and Singh, because the link-up play was poor, the moving into space was poor, the communication wasn't there. Showed a couple of times by balls played through where you'd think a player should run. Particularly remember the second half, one that Butters played for Singh, and Singh just wasn't on that same page. There was nothing there that linked them together as teammates at all.
So knowing what we know about Singh, Krishna and Burns, how about we just turn to some of the new guys that we, because obviously we can bang on all day about that we just didn't look like scoring. But let's focus on the new guys, the ones that didn't actually, or we haven't seen before. Taylor, what did you think of Taylor?
Solid performance, exactly what I'd expect out of him. He drove through, because there was such a lack of option within midfield for him, he drove forward several times. Unfortunately, he would then get to the cul-de-sac and there'd be no movement in front of him to do anything with it, and he had to come back and play back to Kupczynski or Fox.
Yeah, I thought he was very solid. I've never seen a man smile that much.
He was enjoying himself, didn't he?
He was having a joke about with someone that put in a rash challenge on Kakache, I think, and had a wee smile and a laugh with him, and I'm just like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in a Phoenix jersey.
Yep.
But
I like to see it. I like the fact that he's enjoying himself.
He has a reputation as being a good team man, and I think that's what you need when you're going to have a hard season. You need someone like that. As much as you've got Jura whipping everyone up, going, come on, lads, having someone that can release the pressure as well and just go, it's fun though, isn't it, lads? So I thought he was good. Dave?
Yeah, I agree. I thought he was very solid. I think the issue, as you say, was the movement around him. I think once that all starts to come together, I think we'll see him look like he's one of the best players on the pitch, or alternatively, he'll be completely invisible because he's just doing a good job and we don't need to hear from him, you know?
Yeah. Which is what we hope happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that'll be great. I don't think we're going to see him, you know, tearing it up particularly, but I think he's going to do a very solid job. And we saw that. I mean, if that's what we're getting out of him already, great. It's only going to get better from here.
I've obviously skipped over Mr. Curto. We've already covered that he didn't really have anything
to do. He had nothing to do. He can't prove himself as a player when he really touched the ball. I think they had a couple of opportunities, Bentley, but again, their shots on target were limited as well. Yeah. They had a few that went wide, and I remember him from one free kick, which sailed over the bar, putting in a spectacular unnecessary dive, but that's literally all I saw him do.
I think he just probably didn't see it.
Yeah.
Got a little tired. I obviously he is a very traditional keeper. Doesn't play up, doesn't sweep. He's just there to stop the shots. Passed when a man was open, but that would be about it.
I'm comfortable with that because we have had some concerns at keeper recently. So I'm quite comfortable that that's where we get a guy that will save your shots and be solid and be good in the air and do the catches and make those saves. I'll take that any day of the week.
So Kopczynski,
he was poor. Again, I think I've already touched on the fact that the lack of outlet coming forward, and I put that on him. But again, he joined the squad just before we went to the Gold Coast, to Brisbane, whatever it was that we went for the 10-day squad. And he's then done 10 days of solid hard work, and he hasn't. The only minutes he's got with the players actually playing someone was in that closed doors friendly against Brisbane. So it's going to have to be tempered for me with, you know, I mentioned earlier, he's not been here very long. He needs minutes. He needs game time. So this showed he was shy game time.
Yeah, I think there's two ways this can go. Either it's that he's lacking match fitness and we're going to see him come right. This was a first run out and it was rusty and it looked rusty. The alternative is we've been sold a lemon. You know, it looks good on paper and actually there's a reason he was getting out of Europe. And it's too early to tell which of those directions it's going here. I sincerely hope it's the first, and it's just lack of match fitness, and, you know, we're going to see him come right. But there's always the possibility that actually we've got ourselves a dud here. He certainly looked poor last night. He didn't look the quality of what you'd expect of a guy who's played Champions League football. As you say, he's young. He's come to the other side of the world. Maybe there's a reason for that.
Yep.
I don't think that's the case. But if we keep seeing performances like what we saw last night, you'd have to start wondering about where that's gone wrong.
Yep, I agree. I totally agree with everything you've just said.
Okay, and Mr. Butters, he gave pretty much what I expected him to. Worked very hard.
There's a lack of match fitness again there with him. I say that. It may have been that they were leggy because of the training that they've been through, and so they looked a yard off the pace. I'm putting that down to lack of match fitness, but actually what it might be is that they've just had such heavy sessions that they're now just at the end of their tether with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think the other thing from him is he as you say, you kind of got what you expected from him. He looked like a guy early in preseason in a new team. That's what I felt about him. You know, he was working hard and he was doing lots of the things you expect from him, but he just didn't know the players around him, what sort of runs they were going to make, and they weren't giving him the ball at the right moment and stuff. It just felt like those combinations need a bit more time. And that's what you'd expect this early in preseason. So I think his performance worried me less because it felt like he was doing all the things I expect him to do. It just wasn't quite coming off. And so I'm reasonably comfortable with how he played. I think, you know, I see that coming right.
Okay. So moving on to the more strategic elements, I found it interesting that we started Kakache and Lowry as our fullbacks, two very defensively minded guys, especially when both Doyle and Fenton were on the bench.
Yep.
Doyle especially.
So I reckon that Roots doesn't see Fenton as a right back option. So that's why he's not playing him there. And I'm comfortable with that. I don't think Fenton sees Fenton as a right back option. And why would he? He was there. He was a stopgap measure when it was required, and that was quite a long time ago now when we look back at it.
Yep.
So
do you think we're signing a right back then?
I think we have to. I think what that showed was that whilst Lowry did a job, and as I said, I give him credit for the job, he's not a moving forward fullback, and it showed. He only found the space and the time on the ball once they went down to 10 players.
See, what I'm not sure that Radan wanted a going forward fullback at all. And playing Kakache, I think he's saying, I want the four defensively minded guys across that back line.
Yeah, but Kakache is decent going forward and he puts in good balls as well.
He doesn't look to go forward. He goes forward when there's space and it draws him in. It's kind of by accident.
Almost. And I haven't seen enough of Kakache to determine who is better moving forward out of him and Doyle. The other thing you have to think of, Roots may have wanted to see Kakache specifically.
Yeah.
And that's why he's played him, because he may He's seen a lot of Doyle. Doyle's been around for a while, and he's seen him in pre-season. We know he's an athlete, and we know he puts out what he puts out every single week. He may just have wanted to see what Kikuchi could do.
Yeah, I don't think Kikuchi did himself any favours.
No, he didn't.
I think as a 17-year-old, though, when you've actually had a heavy, you know, doing double sessions, you're still not physically developed, and I think it would take a bigger toll on him than it would on, you know, all the other blokes who are, you know, in their 20s at least.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that whole left side of ours was poor. Between him and Burns, there was no creativity, lots of giving the ball away. It was defensively fine, but nothing else, basically.
Yeah, I think Burns was a big – he didn't drop back and help much. No. And when he did get the ball –
he's not going to ever. That's not a thing he particularly does. I mean, you get that from Krishna at times. Mm. Burns is not a guy you get that from.
Yeah.
But I think the interesting thing about the Kikuchi decision is, you know, he's talked up how he want, you know, they've been working on their defensive setup and he wanted to, you know, continue to work on that and you know, really press that home. I would have thought Doyle is just – locked in your starting left back. If you've been working on that defensive structure and you've been setting that up for 10 days in camp, surely Doyle's been the guy you've been working there, and surely you're going to put that out. Why would you work on a starting back four and, you know, what that defensive structure is going to be like, and then biffing a different guy who's your backup on the day? I think your argument of maybe you wanted to have a look at him, very plausible as an explanation there, but I don't think you've sent out Kikuchi purely as the defensive-minded player, because the reality is, if you're looking at Doyle as your left back, which I think you probably are, we've seen him do a very good job there, you still need him to work in that defensive structure. If you've worked with him for 10 days on how that defense is going to work, it kind of doesn't matter that he gets forward a bit. You go, today I don't want you to get forward much, I want you to focus on doing this job. And when he wanders a bit, fine, you deal with that, because he will. But the fact that we didn't see him there, I find very interesting when we've talked about putting out a really solid defensive structure, that you haven't put out what I think most people would view as your left back. You've put out a makeshift right back and a makeshift left back.
Well, he was subbed on.
You know, it hasn't gone that well. Interesting.
He was subbed in, what, the 88th minute? Mm. was brought on. I thought that was interesting. I thought that, you know, if he's got heavy legs, don't bring him on for 2 minutes. There's no point. He's just, best case scenario, he just gets through it.
And so the question is, if we are looking at Kikuchi as a left back here, so, you know, we were having a look at that, but it's not a lock by any stretch. Where does that think we're wondering about Doyle? Where does that leave him?
That would leave him bench.
Yeah, which is, you know, that'd be interesting.
If he's
leapfrogged Doyle into a starting role, that surprises me, because have we seen anything from Doyle to suggest he shouldn't be our starting left back?
No.
Not really.
Not at all. And last season when he moved into centre back, he showed that he can do a job there as well. I'm genuinely surprised by that selection, and I don't think right now it's the way forward.
No, I think I find it interesting the way he talked about it versus the lineup he put out. I think with that lineup, we did see them play that way, but the actual personnel he put out on the field didn't necessarily reflect what I felt he talked about, if that makes sense. I don't know if it does, but
yeah, it does. Yeah, it makes sense.
So based on the players that we have signed now and what he's kind of shown to be is quite a defensively minded pattern. That's what he started with, and he's certainly focusing on it quite strong. I mean, you're saying over the course of a 10-day camp, he really only looked at defense. Yeah. I mean, that's he's really focusing on that. So based on that,
it's not a bad thing to be focused on.
I mean, not when you can see as many as we do.
Defensive setup can win the league. You know, you don't actually need to score a hatful of goals so long as you're not conceding shitloads.
We let through 55 last year. It was the most of any team in the league. So the fact that he's come in and focused on the defense makes perfect sense to
me.
So based on that, who and where do we think we still have one visa spot left?
Correct.
Potentially two if Roy's citizenship comes through.
Yep.
Which is still up in the air. We haven't heard anything yay or nay about that.
Yep. Nah, hopefully it's days, might take weeks, could take months, you just say.
Who knows? So we've got definitely one visa spot, possibly two. Presumably he is still looking around.
Yep.
Where do we think is a priority?
Yeah, I've got this down flat. It's we need a nine. 100% we need a nine. As you said earlier, this was the perfect example of why we needed a nine, because that outlet would have made all the world of difference to us last night. Yep. So definitely a nine. I think we need another midfielder, preferably a DM. I think, or box to box again, someone who could at least do a DM role, because I think attacking midfield wise, we can play Singh and Butters will be our first cabs off the rank, followed by Rufa. But if you can get someone who can play that attacking role and the defensive role, someone who, like Rowley in his first season when he came over, was signed as a centre back DM, but showed that he had the capability of playing a 10 role as well. So someone of that kind of mould, we need a right back.
What priority?
Yeah.
those three are all priority one.
Yeah, that's precisely the problem we have, because we need two of those, I'd say, are priority one. I say the nine and the right back, priority one. Another midfielder is high priority, but it's slightly below those two.
You could definitely go into the season starting with what we have now, assuming match fitness and game time to get to
no.
Midfield. Not right back, not at all.
But the nine and the right back, you absolutely have to have 100%. Before you start the season. The midfield, as you say, yeah, you could go into the season with what we've got. You could bring in some handy prem players or something. You know, you can fill some gaps in that midfield. But I think this is the real question is, we've only got one import slot. I mean, we can't bank on this second spot. We just can't. So you've only got one. Surely we've got to spend that on the nine. That's where there just isn't a good option floating around Australia or New Zealand.
Well, no, we saw who we brought in. It was Ben Wayne, 17, he's about the same size as my arm.
Well, yeah. And congratulations to him on getting his debut. That's awesome.
Fantastic depth player there. He's not a starting nine for us.
No, he's 3 years away from being a starting nine.
So great that he's getting a chance, but we need a starting number nine, and we need them within the next month. That's only coming from overseas. There isn't someone in that role in New Zealand or Australia just floating around. Anyone who is signed to someone. That's just the reality. So the import slot surely is going there. Who knows who we're getting, but someone. We need that spot filled. Hopefully we get a good one. Which leaves your right back has to be a local. Because we need that person in soon, because they actually need to be involved for the preseason. We can't wait round for the visa spot to maybe become available. So we've got to sign someone now. And again, the options aren't great, which for me makes it very interesting that Gully seems to have fallen off the radar, because he, you know, during the offseason, we were all talking him up as basically a lock for a spot in there. He's a right back. Why haven't we got him? I don't know. There's obviously something...
Something happened in his trial. He obviously didn't trial very well. Yeah, it has to be
maybe what you're saying, if he's not looking for those wing-backs to be players who get forward, because that is what Gully does well. He's not defensively minded. He's a very good right-back, but he's an
attacking right-back.
You know? Well, he started with Team Wellington when he first started with them. He was an attacking midfielder, and he's just progressively moved back and further right as time's gone on.
And he doesn't... bloody great job of it. I think he could do the job here, and he's local. It would make sense, but for whatever reason, Rudan doesn't see what he wants in a right back in Gully, so it leaves us having to look elsewhere, and I struggle to think of other names that we should be looking at.
I know one.
Good.
Jacob Tratt.
Yep.
Yeah, fair enough, and I would happily take Jacob Tratt, 100%. As long as the concerns and the reasons why he left the club, which we won't talk about, as long as that is resolved and everything is good, then I will take him back in a heartbeat, because he showed in the three quarters of a season he had with us what an outstanding player he could be.
Yeah, totally. I think you're dead right. I think that Dave, I think you're dead right. I think Rudan is defence first. I think if you can't do a defensive job, he doesn't want you in the back four. If you can get forward as well, he is much more happy about that. Hence why Lowry is starting as opposed to an attacking fullback.
Well, and yet Doyle isn't, because I think Doyle fits exactly that mould. He is definitely defence first and gets forward when the option presents itself, and he gets forward well, but he's not one to just be wandering like a Gully who is constantly pushing forward. He's very much defensive.
Actually, just on Gully as well, there may be the Club World Cup carrot for him.
Absolutely.
So there just could be, I may be overstretching that, because if I was in that position personally, I would take the pro contract, but that's just my opinion. That doesn't necessarily
I've probably oversold it, because I think the reality is I'm happy that he was in there and he was trialing, and you know, they had a look at him. So from both sides, they've had a look, and for whatever reason, they've decided it's not going to work. So that could be from Gully's side, it could be from Rudan, but they've had a look at him and they've decided that's not the go. So I think we can assume it's not the go. And who are we to second guess that?
Okay, so what that leaves the Knicks with is basically a preseason that's going to involve matches against local teams in New Zealand, local club sides, not even obviously handy prem sides, unless T-Dubs want to hit out possibly.
So they would probably, they don't get together until the end of August at the earliest, and that's when they start signing their players for their preseason. They won't be looking at any game time until October. So T-Dubs, Auckland City may be the teams, like last year at the Community Day, and that won't be happening this year at the Community Day, obviously, where they played the two teams. They will be towards the end of preseason when those guys have actually started to get up to speed and playing some good football. Because as it showed when we first hit out T-Dubs, had been together 3 weeks and we smashed them at Westpac. Yeah. The following week when our B team played them, that was much, much closer. And the closer the time went on for T-Dubs, the better they got. So the closer is the season for that game, the better. But at the moment, those guys aren't going to be ready until a week or two before we start.
Okay, so just to wrap it up, we've got 2 months before the season starts, and we think that there needs to be at least probably 2 to 3 signings to really give the top six a nudge.
I reckon there'll be at least another four signings, to be honest. Yeah. Yep, just to create that depth, just to create, to fill the gaps and create the depth that we
I was thinking.
I think two starting starters.
Yep.
And a third one maybe.
Right.
That starting 11, putting out what it put out last night, is not going to get us near the six. No. The only other teams ever to lose to NPL teams in the FFA Cup never finished higher than eighth in that following season. So that's a, you know, a history thing that we're going to have to overturn. We need to. This has to be a winning season. We've documented. We chatted about this multiple times. We have to have a winning season this season. We have to be in that top six. There is no argument about that. And that's a lot of pressure to go on, Roots. I think the rest of this preseason we will play two more A-League teams, because the A-League teams have to play a certain number of A-League teams in their preseason. So there will be two more of those games, likely to be in Australia, unlikely to be here. They're very rarely.
Mike Redan did mention that they would be travelling over to Australia again, but yep. He sounded like it was up in the air.
Yeah, well, we have to play the A-League team, so there will be preseason games against them, at least two. We can tie in doing some more NPL teams at the same time. I remember I was a couple of seasons ago, maybe Ernie's last season, where we did the two A-League teams and Appiah Leichhardt in the same week. I think that's the sort of thing we'll probably end up doing as well. Much closer to the end of September, I would say.
Right, rolling on to the A-League itself, there has been the return from the was it the Congress Review Working Group?
Yep.
Which, for those that haven't kind of stayed abreast of it, is the committee that basically went through to review the FFA's role as football administrators in Australia and what they should be taking on and shouldn't. It was made up of...
kind of. So they've had a director from FIFA. They need to fix their Congress. That's where the Congress review part comes in. They'd reached a standstill with being able to do it themselves. So a group has come in to go, here's how you're going to do it then. And this is their findings out of that, of how the Congress needs to be reviewed.
And that working group was made up of representatives from the Professional Players Union,
yep.
Representative from the A-League clubs, representative from a couple of the state federations, and a representative from the FFA themselves.
With an independent chair.
And we can go over the full 100 pages if you like, but I think possibly...
I have not read it, so please do.
No, neither have I, to be honest. Smithy did a bit of a review, and the interesting paragraphs that I saw were around the recommendation that the A-League become independent effectively, and that should be happening as of the next season, not this 18-19 season, but the 19-20 season. And the FFA's response to the overall recommendations were basically up.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because it was only a week or two ago a few stories leaked about how the FFA were trying to derail the process and they were stalling and all sorts of things. And they put out a press release saying, no, we're not. We're not trying to derail the process at all. We're fully involved and we're completely engaged in it. The second the review is sent to FIFA, they put out a letter going, no, this is all shit, and we're gonna stand firmly against this and we're going to vote it down. So you've already stalled so long that a group have had to come in from FIFA to hold your hand on sorting it out. When they make the recommendations, go, oh, we're going to stall on that as well, having just put out a press release going, oh, we're not stalling. It's just insane. But the key things for them and their criticism, so two parts. There's the independent A-League stuff, which is interesting and good for the league, but also there's the reset of the entire Congress, which involves giving better representation to every group. Particularly FIFA note the need for representation for women's football, but also a range of other things. So better representation for the state leagues and the professional teams. The FFA are grumpy about the fact that the professional teams, so basically the A-League clubs, I think it's 25% representation that is recommended for them, and any vote requires greater than 75%. So their argument is the professional clubs could block any changes if they wanted to as a block.
You mean just like the FFA is basically doing
correct.
Now?
But the reality is there are other groups that are also around that 25% mark or even bigger that also could act in a similar way if they chose to. The reality is about creating better representation is actually forcing the groups to work together. So if the state leagues are working as a block or the professional clubs or whatever, you actually need to get buy-in from people on the other sides of the fences in order to get stuff done. You know, it can't just be one group steamrolling everything, which I would say is precisely why that working group is set at 25%, because it needs to work for all parties. You can't, as you have at the moment, have a bunch of old boys club just rolling through changes that are opposed by everyone else, but their votes are so small it doesn't matter. And so that's their big opposition there. And then the independent A-League stuff, they're like, oh no, that's giving them even more power. You know, they'll get to be the masters of their own destiny. Well, yeah, as they should be. but it means less money going into the coffers of the FFA. And, you know, of course they're worried about that.
Just a clarification on the money side. So Fox pay the FFA to televise the A-League approximately 50-odd million Australian dollars.
It must give be something or take, like that, yeah. I want to say it's 56 million, but something.
Yeah. And then from that, the FFA pay out the A-League clubs approximately 3 million Australian each.
Call it 3.
So 50-odd million goes into the coffers, 30 million comes back out.
Correct. And the rest goes towards what they would claim as grassroots programs and community football, but largely as Socceroos.
Socceroos and board payouts
I mean, certainly some of that money does filter into grassroots football, and that's great. But the way they talk about it, you'd be thinking most of that $20 million is going to that, when actually I think it's quite different.
How much of the contract that the A-League clubs have earned through Fox, so that the money that Fox pay to show the A-League, how much of that do you think is based around getting the Socceroos on there as well?
Well,
it's hard to say.
Because if they become independent, then they're going to just be going for the A-League rights. They're not going to get that package with Socceroos. And how is that going to impact on the amount of money that the A-League clubs get from Fox to show the league?
There is the suggestion that I've heard this from basically the A-League side of it. They've suggested that they think that the A-League is worth 80% of the revenue that's generated through Fox, which, considering, you know, obviously the Socceroos are a much higher profile, but much fewer games. There's only, you know, a few games that are actually played in Australia that Fox would get to televise straight up. So, and there's obviously the Matildas as well. So,
And there's another revenue stream as well that we're slightly ignoring, which is the final series and merchandising, which at the moment the FFA run the final series and they take all the profit.
True, yeah,
so they've got the tickets for the finals and all of the playoffs. They also wear the risk of it as well because they pay for it. But I would say that those are pretty much guaranteed to print money. And then all the merchandising fees as well, which currently go to the FFA, but an independent league you'd expect be master of their own destiny in that as well. And the interesting thing about the review recommendation is not that it says how that independent A-League should work. It just sets up an independent board to run it.
So
you're mocking my hand gestures that the listeners can't see.
No, I'm not mocking. I'm trying to slide my hand under there so you don't bang the table and make Patrick's job harder. So we've reached kind of an impasse here where the FFA has been had a recommendation put to them to say they should reform in this particular manner. They've said blanket no, not even we will adopt some of it. It's been a no, we will look.
Yeah, and there's an extra step in there as well. So it's been put back to FIFA, and FIFA will come back and recommend what the FFA should do. The FFA have indicated if FIFA try and adopt this, they will not vote to ratify it. They will, I don't know what the current percentages they need are, but they will organise enough of a block to stop this being passed into the
by the current
board, because they would need to ratify it in order for this to happen. They will stop that process by voting it down, which will leave us once again where we were 12 months ago. Who knows what will happen after that?
Well, however, what the suggestion is that FIFA, as their stick rather than the carrot now, would be able to basically remove the Australian representative teams from any competition that's sanctioned by FIFA. So no Socceroos, no Matildas, no junior Socceroos.
No under-20s, no under-17s, none of
which
that.
Which would be massive and quite the humiliation, I think.
Yep.
So we're not really sure how much of a stick that is to the FFA, but certainly it's the biggest stick that FIFA
can't FIFA
could
just
wear.
Come in and disband?
Well, so it's problematic because they could bring in what they call a normalisation committee, but there's nothing to stop the FFA from fighting that legally. I mean, it's the board of a company, essentially. Mm-hmm. If an external body just comes in and says, you're no longer the board, and the board go, well, we're taking you to court, that becomes a process that takes as long as it takes, which is why FIFA absolutely have the power to go, well, while that's going on, you can't play any football internationally.
Yeah.
So that's where that comes in. Because I think if the FFA are going to dig in their heels like this, they seem to be posturing for, they're going to drag it out as long as they can. And I don't think they're going to just let a normalisation committee come in and do whatever they like. Mm. I don't see that happening.
I don't see how they think this is good for the sport in the region. I was going to say the country. I don't care how football goes in Australia.
I definitely do. I think strong football in Australia is good for us. Regardless, by us, I mean not just the Knicks, but New Zealand as well.
Absolutely, but he's saying he doesn't see how the board think they're acting in the best interest.
Oh, I don't think they are acting in the best interest.
No,
I think it's entirely self-driven and self-motivated about the stuff they're doing.
I think on some level, they must think they're doing the right thing. I think they, within their echo chamber, truly believe the things they're saying. They just are stuck in a bygone era and they're only listening to themselves, basically, which is why they're not getting that everyone wants this sort of change to come in.
See, I do agree with you in one way, but I'm also the fact that they've not even looked to do any compromise. They've not actually gone, you know what, this thing is good, we're going to adopt it.
They argue they have, though. They have tried to bring in better representation, but the representation they're trying to bring in maintains the status quo. It keeps the power balance in their own favour and just gives slightly better representation, whereas what FIFA are proposing is completely breaking up that power balance so that no one bloc has the power anymore, and that's what representation is about. They don't view that because they think they have this long-term vision and strategy that they need to keep together, and it needs a driving force behind it, and they think they're that force.
So, yeah.
And they get to line their pockets at the same time. So, you know, win-win for everything.
So, basically,
not everything. For the FFA. Yeah.
In their eyes, though.
Not for football in Australasia. Not for definitely not for the Phoenix. And 100% not for the A-League.
So, the reason why we kind of have discussed this is because of, obviously, the sort of Damocles that's hanging over the Knicks' head at the moment. A reformed A-League, basically, all the A-League clubs and the representatives for the clubs in this struggle with FFA have indicated that the Knicks are safe so long as it's them making the decisions. The FFA, obviously, there's no guarantee at all, and certainly the license is up at the end of next year.
There's some interesting stuff that comes out of it, though, because if it is, say, a lengthy legal battle that's occurring, even the FFA might kind of turn heel on that and go, well, rather than trying to bring in new expansion teams while we're fighting this legal battle for survival, status quo is the thing to maintain. The only time this is bad for us, really, is if the FFA decide that in order to show they're doing the right thing, they need to force through a whole bunch of stuff like expansion and ratify a bunch of those changes and, you know, sign off on who those teams are going to be and whatever. But all of that would rely on there actually being some teams ready to go. There's obviously those expansion bids we've talked about before. But I don't think any of them can, you know, actually stump up the millions of dollars required at the drop of a hat and put out a team 2 months down the track, which might be the situation they're asked into.
We're basically talking, to run that first year, the best part of $7 million Australian to as ongoing costs and also funding their players because they don't get the $3 million that the other 10 A-League clubs would get. Yep. And also there's the at least a couple of those expansion sides were having to build their own stadium, which I am yet to see a stadium that goes up inside a year, let alone without a lot of money.
You're going to need to be an organisation willing to drop that sort of money whilst being installed into the league by a group battling in the courts for their own survival. There's not going to be a lot of confidence in putting in money into that bid, surely, because the second FIFA actually, you know, roll the board and whatever, your entire future's in doubt again.
Yep. So there's a lot up in the air at the moment, and obviously we're not going to work out how the chips are going to fall at the moment.
I think in many ways, though, assume it's good for the Phoenix. Obviously, the working group recommendations are very good for the Phoenix. If all of that comes to pass, fantastic. We're looking at an independent board for the A-League. That probably leads towards a fully independent league at some point down the track. That's good for us.
Independent board for the A-League, we exist. That's it. Yeah. And I'll take, if nothing else comes out of that, out of the recommendations, but the independent A-League, I will take that because that's the outcome that sees us survive.
And better representation for all 10 clubs at the FFA board level as well, which also has to be a good thing. But then separate to that, if they're still shit fighting over this in the courts between FIFA and the FFA, I think we are the least of anyone's problems and we probably are in a good position regardless. So it all depends on how long that all takes, but I think a protracted legal battle, still probably good for us, unless there's some kind of last-ditch play from Lowy.
Speaking of protracted legal battles, let's go over to New Zealand football, because there isn't a protracted legal battle.
Have we actually just done a segue? I'm really impressed.
Oh, you can't talk
yes,
about
it. Yes, I can, because no, I'm so impressed.
I want a standing ovation for that.
That was brilliant, Frosty. Well played, mate. Well done. Sorry.
So we have had movement in the management side of New Zealand football. Mr. Martin's gone. We did discuss this the last time.
I wasn't here, so I feel like we should just enjoy the fact that he's finally bloody gone.
Yes.
What, like 2.5 years after the first time I was hanging a Martin out banner at a handy prem game? It's finally happened.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I remember that. It was quite a long time ago now.
Yeah. So yes, it's something that, Dave, you've rejoiced about quite solidly, I would say.
I mean, rejoiced isn't the right word. It feels like a bit of a weight lifted, having seen all of the problems that's created, knowing that we finally have the chance to move forward into what hopefully will be a much more productive era for New Zealand football feels great. That's hopefully going to happen, but who knows?
But the new news out of this is Andreas Hirsch. He has decided to – did he retire or resign?
He resigned. Martin retired.
Yes.
Yes.
So while he was on special leave while the investigation was going on, he has decided to resign but has agreed to participate fully, and that's quote unquote, in the investigation that is ongoing. Yep. So we now New Zealand Football are now without a CEO and without a technical director, and I – think it's safe to say that there is much rejoicing around the land.
And without one national team coach.
Yes, true. Being the Football Ferns.
Yes.
So that in itself is not the best scenario for any...
none of this is the best scenario.
However, as Dave says, it does feel like a significant relief.
I think that's the best way to describe it, purely because of everything that's gone on, and we've documented that in this pod, everything that's gone on the last 4 years of Andy Martin, it's I think relief is the only way to do it. It's when your technical director and your CEO have to stand down because of the situation you're in, there's nothing good there. You know, everything bad to get to that situation.
One thing to add to that as well, they've stood down before the results of the investigation are even out.
Yeah.
They have both fallen on their swords
before they got pushed.
We even know what that review is going to say. That is not a good sign for whatever went down here. Yeah. And it just isn't.
Employment law in New Zealand, it's hard to get rid of people, right? We know it's hard to get rid of people. So they must know some bad stuff's coming out in that review to put them in a situation where it's better to walk than ride that out.
However, there was
suggestion to retire entirely because of whatever's going to come out. You know,
yeah. There was suggestion that there was a significant amount of money that was paid out to expedite things. Obviously, we don't know that for a fact.
There would have to be some kind of deal in there, because unless they resign themselves by choice and they get paid out and they leave, it's very, very hard to get rid of someone in New Zealand employment law. So there has to be some kind of agreement in there for that to have happened.
I think part of that agreement will rely on their continued involvement in these investigations as well, I think.
Yeah.
If you're just going to let them leave without any discussion, they're not going to remain involved. They know this is bad for them. Why would they stay involved? Whereas with an agreement in place that involves some sort of money exchanging hands, you can put on them, hey, you still have to do this. This is still a thing you're going to be involved in, and that's important. And I think in order to get the right outcomes here, that's money well spent in many ways. You avoid lengthy legal battles. You also ensure they fully comply with this investigation.
So just in, if we can wrap it up in a short manner, because obviously we're going quite long. What do we want to see from New Zealand Football as an organisation in the next year to 18 months?
Jesus, I haven't even thought about that.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I'm just quite comfortable with getting a new CEO, the changes within the board that have been going on, which have been brought about by the federations as well, voting out those that they wish to vote out and getting on people to, you know, bring in progressive change in their, you know, I want to see that kind of thing continue. I'd like to see someone come in who knows New Zealand football as a CEO, you know, to come in and actually go and look at what's best for football here, not what's best for that individual and their PR machine.
I would love to see a CEO, as you say, that's been involved in New Zealand football, but, you know, has a deep background in New Zealand sport. Someone of the like of Richard Reid.
Martin Snedden?
Yeah, Martin Snedden. I think that's a very long boat.
Absolutely. Martin Snedden for a reason, because he's good at what he does.
Yeah. He's the sort of individual that is quite in touch with New Zealand sport, just a question of being a football man, although I'm not sure if Andy Martin was ever a football man.
No, he never was.
Dave, you?
I think more than those things, I think the reality is I don't mind at all if they know anything about football. I think the biggest issues we've had with New Zealand football have been around oversight and around culture. And the Martin era will continue to be remembered as a period where they misled and they stonewalled the public, the media, everyone. It was a very calculated campaign of, we know best and we're not going to tell you anything else. Here's our version of events, just deal with it like it's the truth. I think we need someone to come in there who actually has the best intentions for the sport at heart and is about improving that culture so that the all levels of football in New Zealand can work together, because we didn't see that. We saw the central body fighting against the federations. We saw no one happy with how that was working, and a central body that was just dictating terms. I mean, the Comet rollout was a shambles because of that.
And still is.
The way the fans were dealt with during that time was a nightmare. The only people who seemed happy with the situation were, you know, some of the coaches and some of the staff within the office who were just allowed free rein on whatever they wanted without any sort of oversight. And so I think we need someone to come in who can fix those relationships, which first and foremost, you know, that CEO needs to sort out that culture in that office. It needs to no longer be, hey, we're trying to hide everything, we're just going to do whatever we want, we know best. It needs to be, we're actually doing this to promote the game at all levels. But I think the key thing above that is actually the board oversight. I think Martin had too much control and no one was putting any checks and balances in place on how that organization was operating. And that's what the board is there to do. So we've seen some change at the board level, but we need to see a commitment there to proper oversight of the organization they're running. And that needs to be on the CEO. It needs to be on things like when they're appointing someone who's got a conflict of interest, like they did with Haraf. And, you know, the CEO's going, well, it's fine. Maybe the board should actually be looking into the detail of that, and the board should be having some say in those sorts of decisions. You know, we just need true oversight from the board, and we need a culture shift within the organization. Those two things, I'll be stoked.
Just those two things.
Yeah.
Those are pretty massive
quick
things.
Quick enough wrap up for you?
It wasn't even close, but it was complete.
I warned you.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
To be fair, we could do just a pod on this stuff too. So
Yeah. And it's good to see such passion, Dave. Because God knows it was sadly lacking on FIFA Slack yesterday. So I guess we'll wrap it up there on an evening of good news, bad news, middling news. That's good night from me, and it's good night from Dave and Cam. Good night.
That, Pat, is how you wrap up a pod. Avocado Jesus brings you. Butters brings you.
Brings you.
Losing to a pub football team brings you.
Trying not to rant brings you.
Keeping talking when the host tries to cut you off brings you.
Alveda Zane Pitt brings you.